This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency, with information for IT professionals. For more information, advertising opportunities, and to download other shows, visit ciaops.podbean.com. This is episode 36 with Mark O'Shea, and is brought to you by the Computer Information Agency. For more information, visit us on the web at www.ciaops.com. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and for this episode, I'm joined by an old favourite, Mark O'Shea. Mark, welcome back.
Thanks, Rob. It's good to be back.
Well, yes, it's been a long time. Back in episode 5, we were joined by Mark O'Shea, and it's good to have our first repeat guest. Obviously, I've run through everybody who's willing to talk to me by the sound of it. So
repeat guest, but not repeat in content, I hope.
No, that's right. So again, looking at your old spec from the previous podcast, there's been a lot of changes since that episode. So probably what we need to do, I think, is firstly introduce yourself and let people know who you are, but then maybe bring everybody else up to speed with what's changed over that period of time. So let us know.
Okay, so my name's Mark O'Shea. Those of you in the Australian Partner Channel would know me from having worked at Microsoft for 20 years up until the beginning of this year. But for those of you who don't know me, I've been working at Microsoft during that period. I've recently left. Spent most of my career at Microsoft working in channel focused groups, primarily focused on SMB partners and technologies. So that kind of explains a lot of the changes that have been going on over the, I guess, the last few years. And I think the last call we had, that was, if my memory serves me correctly, it was when we were starting to speculate around when Small Business Server 2011 Essentials would be shipping.
Yes, according to the list here, which I'm looking at, was the 22nd of September 2010. And in this episode, we talked about the upcoming versions of SBS 7 and Aurora. So obviously,
Still back in, so we were still in codename days.
Codename days. that was, and we also mentioned this funny product called Windows Intune.
Which is also shipped.
Exactly. So it's been a long, long time, almost 2 years now. So there has been many changes from your side and obviously from the product side as well since then.
Yeah.
Well, I think that what I'd probably like to start off with today is I noticed that you've recently attended TechEd in the US. I've been to one TechEd in Australia many years ago and found it worthwhile from a technical point of view and got some great information. I've also been lucky enough to attend a SharePoint conference which they held in the US, and oh my God, was that completely different from anything I've seen here. So what can you tell us about TechEd in US? What do you see there?
So going back to what you were saying about the comparison with the SharePoint conference in the US, where you're at an event where you've got maybe 10,000 people, and it's just a completely different scale of event in terms of, you look at all the logistics aspects, all the different rooms, all the tracks that run concurrently, trying to see a familiar face in the audience. It's a very, very different experience, and just completely different scale to local versions of those events. So TechEd, I thought it was fantastic. The first day keynote really did a great job of setting the stage for just all the work that Microsoft's been doing on the server side, and really tying in the whole Windows Server 2012 plus System Center 2012, and finally really strong integration into Azure from those products as well. So making it really easy for you to start moving things from your own on-premise Hyper-V hosts up into hosted Azure VMs, and just making it a really, really simple process. So those of us who have to do some of that local building and then figuring out how we actually start deploying the VMs, there'll be options available for hosters to plug into that stuff as well. So it really makes a lot of this stuff a lot easier moving forward for people who are looking at maybe looking at hybrid solutions or looking at doing on-premise building of images and then easily shooting them up to the cloud when they're ready.
So is the focus very much the enterprise still for TechEd, or is it sort of,
So I did go, I Yeah, I did go to the Seoul SBS session that was being run there, and maybe it was a little bit of an omen, but it was an SBS Essentials session.
Yeah, what's this SBS product? I got no idea what you're talking about.
I think you covered that last week.
I think so we covered it in the last episode. So, I mean, that's obviously a product that's been deprecated, and you know, much gnashing of teeth and weeping going on about that. But we've all decided to get on with things. So, interesting.
Yeah. So in that session, there were probably 10 people in the room. And that's an event with, as I said, about 10,000 people. And I was there because I knew the presenter and wanted to say hi. So it's really not the right show for that kind of thing. And I know that over the years, quite a few of the SBS MVPs that I've known have always wanted a lot more TechEd content. Oh, sorry, a lot more SBS content at TechEd. But it really is hard to justify when most of the people there are enterprise customers who are being sent along by their organization to learn what's appropriate for their roles.
And is TechEd typically a look into the future, or is it a, you know, are we dealing with what's here now? Is it, you know, if you go to TechEd, you know, whether it's, you know, in Australia or whether it's, you know, overseas, if you're lucky enough, I mean, what are you going there to see? I mean, what are you trying to pick up?
It really depends on where Microsoft is in the release cycles. So as much as they'll show you some of the future stuff, so an example of this is if you went along to TechEd expecting to see Office 2013 content, you would not have been a happy person because Office 13 was not a topic of discussion at all.
Which is a bit weird considering that it came out, what, probably 3 weeks after?
Yeah, whereas Windows Server 2012, all of the Azure stuff, a lot of the Visual Studio stuff, all the new versions, all of those things were covered quite heavily, as well as Windows 8. So I think it's really just where they are in terms of release cycles, but also in terms of where they are in terms of what they've publicly announced as well.
Okay, so if you look at the content that was there, what's the thing? Is there something that really stood out for you that, you know, you sort of took away and said, you know, wow, this is fantastic, or this really changed the way I'm thinking? What sort of stuck out in your mind?
For me, it was really I hadn't been paying a huge amount of attention to what was going on in the Windows Server world. So I just, you know, you see the headlines, you sort of read some of the little bits and pieces, but it wasn't until I actually sat down, watched some of the sessions around what they were doing, some of the changes they've made with Hyper-V, some of the things that they've done around clustering, and even one of the things that is something that I really didn't expect to see was the whole resurrection of the SMB protocol as really a first-class network citizen for the first time in a very, very long time. Whereas when you start thinking of what Microsoft's been pushing in terms of clustering and Hyper-V, etc., when it comes to shared storage, the big focus has been on things like iSCSI and your other types of network-attached storage. But in this case, it's really a matter of SMB3 really took center stage. And that was something that I really didn't expect. And then, you know, got to the point where I actually went to sessions that were dedicated to what was new in that protocol. If you had have told me 6 months ago or a year ago that I would have sat in an SMB session, SMB the protocol, not SMB the customer segment, just to clarify, I really would have said, no, you're joking. Why would I do that? So it's just, yeah, it's pretty amazing what they're doing there.
And why do you think that they've gone that way? Is there any reason in your mind why they're focusing so much on that protocol?
I think a big part of it is just the ease with which you can interoperate with SMB shares on the network. So instead of it, if you take a look at something like Fibre Channel and the configuration that's required, or iSCSI and the configuration that's required to get the different devices communicating with each other, versus just typing in a UNC path name and away you go. So that would be something that would need to count towards it. But I think though it was also something where, because it is a Microsoft protocol, they've really got free rein to go through and do a lot of work to add additional capabilities into that. And it really looked like the different teams did work together to build out scenario-based solutions rather than just adding cool technology or technologies that sound cool but didn't actually deliver a lot.
So is this new protocol only part of 2012?
Yeah.
Right. So, and what about on the desktop side? Is it, you're going to need, Windows 8 or the latest to support that as well, or is it mainly?
Well, so Windows 8 will have SMB3 built in as well. And I guess other things there, because it is the common platform, you've also got the new version of Hyper-V included in your Windows 8 64-bit clients as well. So you do have that commonality that carries across the client and the server.
So, it seems not strange, but it seems interesting, let's say, that Microsoft still is, promoting and developing and pushing on-premise solutions. Server 2012 with SMB 3, as you talked about, and what they're doing there and the improvements. So, as much as they're, we are the cloud and nothing else, they're still doing stuff which traditional on-premise people or traditional on-premise solutions can take up.
But this stuff runs in the cloud as well.
Yeah, that's exactly the that's where it all suddenly not changes. But I think again, as we've talked about many times, I think that many people seem to see that Microsoft or some technology providers are abandoning the on-premise thing immediately. So, it's never, we're stopping. We're going to send out the special code, and none of this on-premise stuff works tomorrow unless you're all in the cloud. I think that's so far from the truth, it's unbelievable. I think that, again, you've got this period and you've got these technologies where your skills can still roll into something like Server 2012 with a bit of refresh, and you can still get enjoyment and technical, satisfaction from really diving into the product. I think a lot of that, again, is poor judgment and perhaps some propaganda as well. I think, from what I've seen, the very brief stuff I've looked at, yeah, Server 2012 certainly gets great raps and certainly has great flexibility. And then once you learn that, you have got this ability to move things into the cloud, and that gives you that scalability. So again, at a smaller end of town, you learn the basics, but then you can start scaling up into the cloud. So again, very interesting that it's that way.
Yeah, and I guess the like other elements there that sort of drove me to those sessions were the Office 365 sessions. I think you took a look at what a few of those were. They really weren't able to say anything new because they hadn't announced anything publicly. So things on Exchange, Link, Office 365, they're all very current version focused. So to me, there really wasn't a lot of value to go and learn about things that I'd been dealing with for the last 2 or 3 years since the Office 2010 and Office 365 launches. So the Server 2012 stuff and the Windows 8 sessions, they were really, the high priorities there for me.
So what about a technology like System Center? Where's that? Where do you, can you, where do you think that's going?
Well, one of the good thing, probably one of the best sessions that I saw there, and it seems as though most of the Windows 8 focus sessions that were at TechEd, their recordings have magically disappeared. You could throw in a conspiracy theory there or not. But one of the really good sessions was titled, I think it was something like PC Management in the Windows 8 Timeframe. And it was a joint session by a member of the Windows Intune team and a member of the System Center Config Manager team. And they presented a really good story about moving forward and talking about Microsoft having these two products that kind of do some of the same stuff, but don't really do it in the same way and don't really communicate with each other. But they were talking about how now they're part of the same engineering team, they're part of this same organization. So moving forward, that they really do have to make sure that this stuff does work better together. And I think for things like System Center, there's all the System Center suite of products, even now with the ability for it to start pushing VMs up into Azure or into other hosting providers, it gives you an idea that it's not just about that desktop management piece that people may remember from the old SMS days, and it's not just about Operations Manager. There are so many more components in there, like the Virtual Machine Manager, the orchestration capabilities, etc., that it really is. Yeah, it's a huge platform to itself. So it's you couldn't it would be hard to be a System Center expert with all of the different components that are in the suite of it now.
Okay, so I suppose is are the products like System Center, which are typically being enterprise focused, are they coming in different flavors and moving down the chain, or is it just that the people are able to access them and use them through things like Windows Intune, which is a subscription basis rather than shelling out for a license for the whole product? So
one of the things that I've been trying to keep an eye on to see what's happening there is to see if there is going to be a new version of the System Center Essentials product. So the version that came out for Ski 2010, pretty good product. But now that all of the new versions of the System Center components are out there, it's kind of sitting there looking a bit dated. It's a little bit rough around the edges, waiting for a new release. But as far as I know, there just hasn't even been any reference to a new version of that in the pipeline. And the question is whether it's because they want people just to use the full versions, or is it we're not really going to do the scaled down version anymore because we don't really think you should be having that kind of infrastructure on premise. I don't know. There's no message that's actually being sent because they haven't announced what they're doing either way.
Okay. So I suppose for a lot of people in this space, in the smaller end of town, they've heard of the Windows Azure and what it is and potentially what it is. But can you give us is it possible for you to give us an easier idea or a simple what it actually is, what it can do, or
capabilities? Okay, so there's several elements. So I think if you think of Azure more as the overall brand, and then there are quite a few different components that run underneath that. So some of them are things such as it providing SQL capabilities. So it's not SQL Server in the cloud in a hosted type scenario. It's more a cloud-based version of SQL Server that's got certain SQL capabilities, but it's not exactly the same as SQL Server because it's got things like the ability to start scaling out as demand it needs to be met, etc. It's got hosting capabilities in terms of web hosting. You've got some of the new roles such as the virtual machine hosting capabilities. So choosing, do you want like a single proc VM? So some of the stuff there that you'd see through Amazon, for example, but then other things that they're working through to make sure that you can do things. People who are looking at doing large amounts of media encoding, for example, can start renting the cycles to do that kind of thing. So it's really just a big, huge cloud of machines with different roles, and really, it's just a pay-per-use kind of model or subscription model for it. And the big thing with Azure is that on its own, it's not really anything. It's what you do with it. It's some of the elements, a developer platform, the virtual machine hosting. Well, it really depends on what the virtual machines are that you do host in it, what they'll deliver. So we've been playing around quite a bit with some of the different elements there because it's working for a Microsoft partner, we prefer to stay in the Microsoft space and utilize those services rather than having to go out and put together something that we hope works as well and has got the same level of integration. And just another one that I just thought of that Microsoft has finally started talking about are the Azure-based Active Directory services. And this is what's been running under the covers and running for Office 365 users, but now it's also something that's available separately, and it's also what the latest version of Windows Intune can integrate with as well.
Yeah, I think to me that's one of the exciting, interesting components is if one of the big limitations of Office 365 in the SMB space is typically the single sign-on, the Active Directory integration, and that, it can be done, but it is difficult in ADFS and DIRCSync and all that sort of stuff, but if it's possible to replicate your AD simply using Azure into the cloud, so you've got that, backup domain control or whatever, that's certainly making that a hell of a lot simpler and a hell of a lot easier to implement, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Well, I think as much as some people may say, the days of on-premise solutions are numbered, I'd flip that a little bit to say the days of on-premise only solutions are numbered. So I think everything has to start moving towards some kind of hybrid model, whether you're talking about messaging, whether you're talking about AD, etc. And just having the ability to have some of that data replicated out in a highly available fashion. so that if you do have some kind of natural disaster or even something as simple as a blackout, that you could still get access to that data, or other users could still access it through the cloud.
I think the other thing too is you know, moving into this space more is it seems to me, you know, more and more amazing how many customers have locations all over the place, or have employees who don't go into the office, or have employees you know, all geographically dispersed. And you sort of go, you know, we want to work as a team, we want to collaborate, we want to share information. And again, you know, to bring that all back to a central hub with all the servers and the routers and the firewalls and the policies and the securities and the costs is not a simple process anymore. It is really, really complex to do some of these things that, you know, employees need to do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, or even for me, I spent, like so far this year, I've spent 3 months, so, you know, just under half the year, actually, yeah, just under half the year working from overseas. And most of the time, people didn't even realize it. I was still using Link, I was still using all the online services. So for me, having things that are cloud hosted makes more sense than having to connect back to some, through some small internet connection back into a server that's sitting inside of an organization. Having something where it's actually hosted in a public environment where there are multiple routes through to it, knowing that people are handling all of the redundancy options, it just means that regardless of where I am, I can just keep using all of the tools that I want.
Well, I think it's interesting. I got into an Office 365 demonstration today for a customer, and they, you know, basically said, look, you know, we want to see what the cloud has to offer and this and this. But it was very hard to get over initially the resistance to that. Look, I want access to my back-end SQL. I want access to this database. I want access to this. And then you sort of say, well, hang on. You know, you want this, but do you actually use it? You know, what's the price that you're paying for this? No, I really want it. You know, it's really important to me. And, you know, I have all these trust issues and these sort of things. You go, okay, well, you know, we have to move beyond that. But then when you actually start showing them solutions you can develop in something like SharePoint Online and how it can be deployed so quickly, and it's a per month, per user cost, and they get access to the enterprise level features, all of a sudden, you know, the conversations move from being a technical discussion and worrying about bits and pieces and facts and figures and logins and passwords to, well, you know, I can see this saving us money, or I can see this, you know, rolled out for these users. And again, in general, I think that's perhaps the success of the Apple model to an extent. They've, you know, simplified it. I think at the end of the day, that seems to be the way that successful technology is going, is that when it gets to a consumer, it needs to be really simple, and they need to be able to make it work. And I think that to do that on such a large scale is, yeah, you just need these back ends now. It's just, you know, as in, I think this, yes, as you talk about it, is a hybrid. You can certainly do some stuff on-prem, which you can't do in the cloud just yet. But, you know, some of this serious computing that even the one-man bands are asking for, I don't see any other option except getting it deployed from, you know, these sort of hosted environments.
Yeah, and even some of the things that that people don't really take into account when they are looking at solutions such as Office 365 is, and maybe doing a comparison to what they may be able to deploy themselves for the customer on premise, is not taking into account the fact that it's things like replicated Exchange databases, that there's all this high availability infrastructure that's there, that for the typical SMB customer, it's just not financially feasible.
Yeah, and I think, again, you know, it's very interesting. You know, same customer wants all these features and all this functionality and you know, thinks that they're doing all this. But again, when it actually comes to paying for it, you sort of look at it and say, well, you know, what you're talking about, I'm no expert, but, I mean, that's a fair amount of money to be spending on technology. And as a business person, my first question to you would be is, are you getting a return on that investment? You know, are you monitoring? Are you able to do that? And, again, I think to an extent, like I said, you know, people are beyond, you know, they're beyond, most, the average user is beyond the technology. They just want it to do a function.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, again, you're looking at, you know, simple devices, and again, you know, the tablets, the, you know, the Windows phone, those devices are becoming the platform. Like it or not, that's the platform that they're being used. And I think that, you know, the smart operators are saying, well, what can we use? How can we integrate this? How can we, you know, solve these business problems rather than getting locked up in, you know, speeds and feeds and suppliers?
Yeah. But one of the things I really hope for, though, is I really hope that once Windows 8 is out in the marketplace and things like the Windows RT tablets, that they do emerge as serious competitors to the iPad, because I finally buckled and bought an iPad, and I cannot say that it's a device that I'm enamored with. It is an exercise in frustration every time I use it.
And is that because it doesn't do enough, or what's the frustration?
Everything from the... it's primarily user interface related, mm-hmm. where it doesn't work the way I work. Mm-hmm. So even things where I wanted to cut and paste a phone number that someone sent me in Facebook when I was in the Facebook app, I couldn't actually cut and paste the number and then paste it into Skype. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, hang on, didn't Microsoft get criticism for this because Windows Phone didn't support cut and paste? And it's like, oh no, but that was Microsoft, so it was different. So it's just little usability things. And I think also I'm a bit of a junkie for either high-res multi-screen setups. So going for a device where you can't do any side-by-side application docking or anything like that, I just find that not being able to do that extremely frustrating. So even some of the limited ways the ways that you can do that in Metro, they are a bit limited compared to what you could do if you were just working directly on the Windows desktop, but at least it gives you the option. So for me, that's a big productivity boost that I'd be getting there. And even some of the things that you don't really think about, whereas with the iPad, even if you could do some side-by-side docking of applications, because it's not a like your typical 16:9 type display, it's not really a good client if you do want to do anything side-by-side anyway. So, and that's where I think the iPad will be a much more natural device when you're using it in portrait mode, but the widescreen Windows 8 devices that I've seen so far do work really nicely when you are using them in landscape mode.
Okay, so I mean, obviously, one of the main competitions, and it's amazing when you think about what Microsoft is bringing to market this year with, you know, new versions of Server, new versions of Office, new versions of Windows Phone, Office 365. Obviously, the major focus at the moment is the Windows 8 platform, and that obviously has some major changes, especially around the interface style. What's your sort of take on it based on what you saw at TechEd? I mean, obviously that's a technical audience and that sort of thing. I mean, what's the feeling?
Okay, so one of the things that I can tell, and hopefully I don't get into trouble for this, but I could tell that there had been coaching around how they approached the no more start button discussion. Mm. And it all revolved around still being able to easily do the things that you currently do. Mm. Except browse the start menu. But the kinds of scenarios they were talking about were, did make a lot of sense. Where, I don't know about you, but for me, the start menu is really only where I go to hunt and peck when I really need to, because I've got no idea what it is what I'm looking for. Normally, I'm just typing something in the start menu, or alternatively, if you see my laptop, which I think you will do next Wednesday night, you'll see that everything I want to use, most of it is actually just pinned to the bottom of the screen anyway.
Yeah, and that's, so, I agree with you. I mean, that's exactly how I do it. I, pin it to the bottom of the stuff that I use all the time. And if I need to, you hit the start button and type the first three letters, then hit enter, and generally it's at your fingertips. So, again, I think that obviously, people don't like change, and I understand that. But I think on the other side too, it's becoming a bit of a thing that, if you did try it, maybe there would be some differences. I think that, one of the interesting studies is that when Microsoft asked for feedback on what they could do to improve Word a couple of versions ago, 90 or 80% of the requests that came in were already there, and that's when they came up with the ribbon interface.
Yeah. So,
again, I think that, what I see out there is this fantastic array of tools that most people have at their disposal. But like I said, that they're using them in such a basic way. And I think anything that exposes more of that would be a big benefit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think there's obviously things that probably, I guess if there's going to be a Windows 9 named product, there'll be things that obviously will change. The same way that there were tweaks and revisions made between the way things worked and looked between Vista and Windows 7, everything was still building on that Windows Vista base in terms of the core OS itself. So when you look at Windows 8, you take a look under the surface, and there are some big enhancements underneath the surface to what you could do with Windows 7. And the one that I really, really like is the whole having the proper Hyper-V, not having to run a virtual PC or maybe a competitive product because I needed to run a 64-bit VM.
Okay, so what we're sort of saying, what we're seeing now is obviously the virtualization becoming almost native in the desktop.
Yeah, well, so you've got virtualization becoming native in the desktop. Even if you take a look at what they're doing with the Office 365 click to run stuff, you're essentially looking at application virtualization there. So now you've got the side-by-side capabilities along your existing Office installation. So I think that the whole concept of virtualization, it's just something that is just something that is going to become more and more critical, especially for those people who need to hang on to older versions of things. That virtualization layer will just seem more and more transparent over time.
Well, I think one of the interesting things I've heard is that, let's say that you've got a Hyper-V machine, 2008 server and running your machines. Apparently, basically, you can just more or less copy those machines over and update some client software, and you're good to go. That we're sort of getting to that. You're sort of thinking, that's fantastic. If you've got your virtual machine, put some more tin, bigger and stronger and faster tin underneath it, and give it some more resources. But you don't have to go through this heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching process of physically migrating one thing to another and all the dramas. It's just basically a copy and an update, and you're done.
And that makes it a lot easier. And even if you put an IT admin hat on and think, well, these are virtual machines that we need to distribute. We've already got all this infrastructure for building out Hyper-V based images really, really quickly using, whether it's WDS, whether you're using SCCM, etc. You can build out those images really quickly using the infrastructure you've got and then move them across to the client rather than having to do a kind of very painful handcrafted solution using virtual PC.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, it is amazing to me that there are still a lot of people who haven't got into the virtualization. And again, it seems that, the way they're building it in natively, the tools, my understanding is that the 2003 virtualization technology will allow you to do offsite replication automatically. Images can be replicated to another location, and that's just built in at no extra cost.
The Hyper-V replication. It's doing incremental snapshots every 5 minutes and shooting them across the wire.
It's just, like I said, that sort of thing is there are so many people I know who are out there trying to replicate exactly that using all these different tools when, this is what, a release away sort of thing. It's available, more or less today.
Yeah. Well, that's even one of the side projects that I'm working on at the moment was moving across to a Windows Server 2008 R2 dual cluster environment. But I've actually just asked them to put it on hold and wait a couple of months because the stuff that's coming in Server 2012 is just so much better and gives them so much more flexibility that it's not worth going through the process of learning how to optimize for the current platform when the new one just blows what's currently available out of the water.
And I think you're right. Sort of stepping away from the infrastructure stuff that I've done for a long time now and moving, more, in, I suppose, to a development sort of software side. But it seems to me now that, the releases, the incremental improvements are becoming so much greater and so many more features because obviously they've been able to align this common platform. So again, an interesting comment is that everybody carries on about how, maybe they don't like the Metro interface or whatever. But when you get to see that Metro interface from your Windows phone to your desktop to the server to Office 365 to Word, Excel, you begin to see the bigger picture. And, to me, as looking at it as a consumer, it makes a lot of sense. One style of interface across the whole product range is certainly going to make it a lot easier for a lot of people.
Okay. And how did you feel about the finally getting an announcement that they were moving to an NT core for Windows, the next version of Windows Phone? Did that make you happy?
Oh, I can tell you again, the virtualization is just, it's just fantastic. And I think that's another very interesting conversation because, you know, one side of the coin is that, you know, people perhaps who have a Windows Phone and, you know, love Windows Phone 7 and it works fantastic, best phone on the market and blah, blah, blah. Well, they're saying, well, you're not going to be able to upgrade it because, you know, what the hardware won't support, you know, Windows Phone 8. But at the end of the day, these things are disposable. I'm happy enough generally to toss it away and get a new one when the contract ends or whatever. So
see, I'll actually take that a step further. And my view is that you should not buy any piece of technology on an assumption that there's going to be any kind of upgrade available in the future.
I agree.
And, you know, apply it to software, but especially apply it to hardware where you've got even things like people's televisions, people complaining when, Samsung put out a new UI for the TVs. It's fantastic compared to the old one, but they're not offering an upgrade to the old one. And again, I might upset people with the answer, but my answer to that is, well, duh. Of course they're not going to do it. Why are you going to keep investing in something that effectively you stopped doing development work on at least a year, if not 2 years ago? So things like the phone upgrades, and this is stuff that applies to Android as well. It's not a Microsoft thing. It's not any particular segment of consumer technology. I think it's just pretty much everything now. It's just because it may have an ability to be upgraded. I view that as something that if you do get any kind of upgrades, just treat it as something extra special and rejoice in it. But if you don't get any upgrades, it's, well, did anyone actually guarantee that there would be those upgrades to begin with? And do you have it in writing with a money back guarantee?
Well, I think the other thing too is that, you know, that it's all great and yeah, blah, blah, blah. And you want a device that lasts forever and runs everything. But you know, like I said, you know, it's just not possible. If you do, then there's this huge limitation. And, you know, Microsoft's biggest competitor to, you know, Office 2013 is going to be Office 2007 or Office 2010. You know, that's the sort of thing. You've got to move forward to take advantage of and build these sort of things. And, you know, every manufacturer does that. You know, Apple, you know, a number of years ago basically redid the Mac OS and all that sort of stuff. So I think, like I said, I totally agree. I think it's a fact of life. I think consumers now, you know, people are getting used to it and the phone thing where they're, you know, they're on a contract and they just go in and trade it in and get a new one and they get the latest one. And you know, the Samsung Galaxy 2 comes out, then the 3 comes out and everybody jumps on it. And again, I think that's just part of the course. I think the other very interesting technology to me that is leading the way and that I'm amazingly impressed with is Xbox. Xbox is just, oh my God, you know, it's got such huge potential.
Or the and just what they've done in terms of milking a hardware platform I probably shouldn't say dated, but really, if you're looking at it in terms of PC hardware or gaming hardware, it's not something that it's not something that's evolved over time. So even adding in things like Kinect, etc., they've got a pretty strict set of rules and regulations they've got to work around in terms of what they can actually do to keep the system running.
And again, I think that, again, one of the things is when you stop and think about it is, again, you know, Xbox is, you know, the hardware and the little flashing lights and all that sort of stuff and the gaming and the CDs. But hang on, the majority of it today probably is the back end, is the Xbox Live, is the online gaming, is all these nine-year-olds running around shooting me without hesitation.
Yeah.
But that's a huge online network that's more or less that's up all the time and has, you know, latencies critical for that. Microsoft's been running that successfully for years.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, people underestimate that investment, underestimate that sort of technology and where else can it apply. And again, when they changed the interface and made the Xbox more metro, again, we're getting integration. But for me, things like the little YouTube app that you can queue up all these YouTube videos through the day and then go into the app on the Xbox and sit in front of your TV and play them when you're sitting in the beanbag. I mean, that's just stunning to me. And again, you look at it and think, why would I ever watch network television again?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of good stuff to come. And as much, there's a lot of speculation around what's coming in the next version of the Xbox. And whatever it is, it's going to be pretty good.
Oh, and I think, again, I think to me, the big advantage is the whole is beginning to be this whole ecosystem. You know, again, I appreciate people have other devices and other, you know, suppliers. But to Microsoft's credit, again, you know, there is a Link app for the iPad. There is a Link app for Android. There are so many more apps available on the platforms. I think, you know, they've come to the realization that people want to bring their own device and run it. And, you know, they're effectively a software company. And why shouldn't they use these sort of platforms? So I think, to me, I've seen that as a shift as well. But that's the exciting thing, that you're getting this consistency across all these applications in this ecosystem. And again, you don't have to immerse yourself totally in every aspect. But when you do, from the Windows phone all the way up to the cloud stuff, it's becoming a pretty good and consistent experience.
Yeah. And the other thing I like, though, is even when you are working with an iPad or you're working on the Windows phone, is running the same applications across the different platforms to see how they take advantage of the look and feel or the capabilities of the device. And I think that's something where what Microsoft have done with Windows Phone, they've, in terms of what they've done around, you know, the consistency with applications, etc., is absolutely fantastic. And if they can keep that going with Windows 8, the whole Metro, people sort of not sure if they want to go down the Metro path, it's something where the apps will drive you to it.
I think, again, I think the reality is that to a large extent, you know, the hardware or whatever is going to become irrelevant. You know, to an extent, yeah, look, you know, you can have a loyalty to a brand, a phone or whatever. But, you know, again, it's the functionality. It's the ease of use. It's what do you do with it every day? And the Windows Phone stuff with the integration with social networks, and that has been very well done by Microsoft. And that's where they're getting a lot of benefit. And again, I think that, if you step back and look at it logically, or you look at it, you know, with equal balance, a lot of it makes a hell of a lot of sense. A lot of it, you know, you can see having advantages, especially for all levels of consumers, you know, not just the enterprise or not just the small business. Yep. And again, I think that Microsoft does deserve a lot of kudos for, you know, there's a lot of risk for them doing that, but they are beginning to pull these pieces together. They are beginning to mesh it together and make it a consistent environment and make it very similar. And I think potentially if they can get that right, it's going to be a huge win.
Yeah. And I, one of the fears I've got, though, is that you've got the people who are going to do the whole let's resist Windows 8. And for me, that's something where if you're going to be going down the Office 2013 path, if you're already bought into the Microsoft ecosystem, then really the Windows 8 and Metro elements are really just a natural part of that. And the longer that people fight it and stay on Windows 7, you're just getting further behind where things have moved to.
Yeah, and I think, again, it's one of the things that I found is, you know, I would question myself, you know, the way that I use a computer, that I can't really see myself reaching out wanting to touch the screen and you know, do that while I'm at my desk. Yeah, not quite. But having a look at it, again, what you could do is you could buy a smaller pad or a smaller screen and put it, say, on one side of your desk, and that could be touch-aware. And you could actually use that to quickly, like, you know, find the applications and click it. So rather than having to go with a mouse, you can, again, use a smaller tablet-sized device to actually, you know, interface. And to me, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because that would be very handy, that I could just quickly flick through a number of pages and click the icon I want. So, again, I think people tend to look at it and look at it in very much the same old terms they've used it, rather than saying, well, you know, what new features can I take advantage of? And there's a bit of pain, there's a bit of growth there, but the productivity benefits can be astronomical. I mean, yeah, it's amazing to me that, you know, how many people do you know that know about Windows 7 jump lists?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have your jump list and you pin that regular file to your desktop. And again, the icons are down the bottom. If I need to open the same spreadsheet I open every day, well, it's sort of more or less pinned to my taskbar. It's just brilliant.
Really. Yeah, and even if you don't pin it, if you've got Excel pinned, it's going to be in the list anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, those sort of things. And I think that, you know, for me, another stunner is OneNote. I just, you know, OneNote is one of the apps that I just, you have to have everywhere, in my opinion. Yeah. And I just can't wait for it to come out on all the devices. and again, I notice it's obviously out in every version of 2010, but my world for it to run on every platform natively. But again, through Office Web Apps and through SharePoint or through SkyDrive, bingo, you've got it as when you've got a browser.
Oh, yeah.
So you look at it and sort of say, you know that there are many ways to skin a cat here, and this is proving to be very – I think, again, this will prove to be – especially looking at Office 2013 quickly – this close integration, this hybrid stuff to the cloud, the native share, native saving to SkyDrive, and yeah, I'm beginning to see all this. You know, again, from a consumer point of view, you talk to people who are average users, and you know, they get it. It's as simple as that. They get it.
And I'm just happy that Microsoft is finally getting around to promoting this SkyDrive thing that they've had for years.
Oh yeah, thank God.
You know, they're best kept secret, and I guess between SkyDrive and Live Mesh and the changes and the name, the renaming, etc., that they've been doing over the years, it's two of the, you know, the most useful consumer technologies Microsoft's ever released, and most people don't even know they exist.
Well, I mean, the SkyDrive app for the desktop, you know, you put on Windows 7, you can put it on, your Mac and your iPad, and you just copy documents between them and open them. Yeah. And all that. It's just, like I said, you know, it makes life so much easier.
Yeah.
Because you've got that, you know, the cloud behind it, enabling you to do simple transfers. And again, when you talk to, you know, the average, you know, say Apple person about it, is, you know, they say, well, look, I take a photo on my iPhone over here, and then 2 minutes later, it's on my Mac, and then it's over here as well. And, you know, they don't need to know all that other stuff. It just happens. And
No.
And that's perhaps the piece that Microsoft has been missing. But it is, looks to me, it certainly seems so. It's getting there faster and faster.
Yeah, and I think the updates that will come to the Office Web Apps as well, because most people probably aren't even aware that you've got the Office Web Apps within SkyDrive. If they don't know that SkyDrive exists, they wouldn't know about Office Web Apps at all either. So I think now with what they're doing with the new betas for Office and really starting to drive people to the online version, so they can actually see what they can really do.
Again, I think the thing is that there are so many options available in the market. It is confusing, but it makes a lot of sense if you're in the Microsoft ecosystem to use the Microsoft products to do what you need to do. And they're definitely comparable. And again, they integrate so much better. And it's not a huge leap, if you know what I mean. And I think, again, there's an opportunity there for people to help other people understand those products, implement those products, utilize them to the best of their ability. And as I tell a lot of people, is, you know, really, you could walk into a business and say, look, you know, I can give you, you know, free email, free cloud storage and potentially backup. All these free services from the web won't cost you anything. All that'll cost you is a bit of my time, which, you know, you should be happy to pay with, because you're getting all the other stuff for free.
Yeah.
And we've never seen that before. And the other advantage that gives you is, guess what? You can implement that solution immediately. As soon as you walk in the door, no ordering, no whatever. You just walk in the door and you can start deploying that. And guess what? You go to the next client and offer exactly the same solution, because the products at the back end are exactly the same.
Yep.
So again, there's a business model there. But again, that's not necessarily for everybody. But I think the important point you've drawn out there is the fact that it's, you know, we're moving to this fact where it's going to be hybrid. Everything's going to be hybrid in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, even when you look at Windows 8 with the integration with using SkyDrive for storage, instantly it's become a hybrid solution.
Yeah. And again, big thing is you know, power up Windows 8, I log in with my, you know, live ID, and guess what? Everything's configured for me. Everything's brought down. Yeah. Everything's done. You know, I get another Xbox and I log in with my Windows live ID there, and all my icons, all my scores, all my, you know, besties things are all there immediately as well. And when you sort of see that and the ease of it. And again, Windows Phone's another one, same sort of thing. Log in with a live ID and it self-configures. There's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I think is really nice with Windows Phone, is the number of times you don't have to enter your username and password.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. And I think that, like I said, I think now it's got to the point where the apps that you want, or the apps that I use, are already on the phone. You know, there's enough. And, you know, I browsed and I found that, you know, free ones. So, you know, there was one I came across a little while back that allowed me to, you know, keep track of my parking, you know, where I'd parked and how long the meter ran for and all. And I mean, really, you know, it does the job. That's what I need. You know, I'm not, I don't need, you know, the other 15 fart apps to put on the device.
You know, well, I thought you already had them. That's why you don't need them.
Well, you know, they all have a slightly different resonance. So it is, you know, you do have to download it. Just check that it's, you know, it's the right thing. But again, you look at something like the Qantas app. Oh my God, what a fantastic application. You know, makes full use of the platform. It's really chalk and cheese between that and some of the other apps you see on other devices.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, look, I'm excited. I think that, you know, Windows 8, you know, the sooner the better. My only concern there, obviously, is think people, unfortunately, I think Nokia is obviously struggling. So Microsoft's got to make a decision to what platform it may run on. It's unfortunate, but them's the break sort of thing. Okay, so we've strayed into consumer land a bit here, and we've mentioned Hyper-V and Azure. Nothing else from the tech ed side that really grabbed you that we...
I guess I did the quick mention of the some of the sessions around Windows Intune. So it was good to see Intune getting quite a bit of time on stage, or quite a few sessions at tech ed, but then also at WPC, they got quite a few sessions. To the point where somebody I know on the MVP side of the Office 365 business was a little bit miffed, thinking, "Well, how come Intune is getting all this love in the breakout rooms?" Mm-hmm. But it's good to see that it's getting a lot of attention. They've added the mobile device management capabilities, which strangely enough require an on-premise Exchange server. To deliver the policies and applications. So there's some little things there where it's just really release cycle stuff. So really it's the kind of thing you'd expect to see addressed in the next Office 365 update. But of course that would just be speculation until it is something that goes in there as a real feature.
So going forward for you, obviously Windows Intune is something that you'll be focusing on.
Yeah, so that's something that we are doing a lot of work on today. We've got a lot of engagement with Microsoft around it as well. Some of the scenarios that we are looking at doing with some of the customers that we've got, but also some new opportunities that have come to us, and trying to think of looking at some different ways of utilizing not just Intune but some other parts of the Microsoft stack to really give some solutions that are a little bit left of center in some ways, but very, very usable and very functional in terms of what they're actually delivering.
Okay, so you know we'll take it back to the more S than M, so the smaller and the enter, you know, that sort of side of the business or that side of the market. Why should companies in that space be looking at something like Windows Intune, in your opinion?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons, and probably the first one is that most of them don't really have any insight into what's going on their machines at all at the moment. So even though Intune may not have every single management capability of something like System Center or its competitors, there's still more in there than what people have already got. And the other element of it is that the Windows upgrade license. So those customers who've got the Windows Intune subscription, they're eligible to upgrade to Windows 7 Enterprise today, Windows 8 Enterprise when that becomes available. So being able to go through and staying on the technology curve rather than falling behind it. And that way you're really getting the best value out of what it is you're actually already investing in.
Okay, so... not only do they get the security side of it, they also get the potential for a Windows update. Yeah. What is there anything you can share with us as to what is coming down the track potentially, or where the product will sort of move to?
Well, probably the best insight for that in terms of what's actually public at the moment was the discussions in the combined session that the Intune team did with the Config Manager team at TechEd, where they were talking about a future where, you know, you have to expect a higher degree of interoperability, for example, between them. And while they weren't giving any commitments around when or what level of interoperability, it really doesn't make a lot of sense long term to have two consoles to get through to different types of clients or servers, for example. So you could speculate there in terms of there needs to be something a lot more unification than there currently is, which really is nothing. But it's a positive sign that they're part of the same team now, and they can work towards common goals rather than each out there doing their own little thing.
And I think, again, that seems to be the message from the whole, you know, the simplification of Microsoft. Obviously, they've taken some products out of their range, but they seem to be, you know, like I said, even in the server range, I don't think there's an enterprise version. It goes from standard to data center, I think, from memory. So, again, they're simplifying a lot of these product ranges, which makes sense, really.
Yeah, and even when you start extrapolating just the cost to them, to their distributors, etc., of having too many SKUs for each product. Like, think about all the different license types it has to cover, even if you're just talking OEM and FPP, before you start looking into the price lists of all the different volume license variations. So having an ability to simplify that just has huge impacts in terms of how many SKUs that one, what you think of as one product. If you think about how many SKUs that actually blows out to by the time a partner or a customer is actually buying it, there are some really good benefits of having some reduction there.
Yeah, and I think, again, it's moving towards a world where, you know, the technology to an extent is moving to the side, you know, we're moving into the background, and, you know, some people will definitely, you know, need to keep up and be skilled with that. But again, the opportunity seems to be around adding the business value. What can these tools do? How can you help a business achieve what they need to achieve and implement that? That's the big opportunity.
Yeah, definitely.
And again, I think, you know, again, you've now got to look at this spectrum where you've got, you know, the Windows phone through the desktop, through the server, to you know, the cloud. And again, a smart business person would say, well, look, you know, we want more opportunity than less, and having the ability to still do the on-premise stuff in you know, as we have to an extent. But now we've got this other opportunity to look at cloud, to look at you know, Azure in the cloud, to look at Office 365, to look at Intune. You know, we don't have to sell the family jewels immediately to jump on board. We can, you know, to an extent start easing into it. But the message is that, you know, you need to be doing that now. You just can't be sitting on the sidelines and saying, no, I'm not going to do it until X. Now's your opportunity, obviously, to parlay your skills in what you know and still keep using them on-prem, but also start saying, well, you know, if we move this stuff from Hyper-V into Windows Azure or whatever up in the cloud, then, oh, look at all the benefits we get and look at all the standardizations we get. I think that's going to be good.
Oh, yeah. And I guess that's the thing that I guess does make a lot of the Microsoft technology stand out from some of its competitors, is that they really are one of the few vendors out there who does provide a good story, whether you are talking on-premise or cloud-based solutions or a hybrid approach. They're not really forcing you to completely abandon on-premise just because they do have a cloud service.
And I think, again, that's unfortunately that message seems to get lost in some of the discussions that are out there, and some people's opinions. I think, again, technology is as technology does, and there's opportunity there for everybody. I think it's just a matter of that. The reality is, you know, there needs to be a bit of growth, a bit of learning, a bit of, you know, buddying up, a bit of perhaps, in, you know, people who run a technology business need to look at some of the stuff they shouldn't be doing. You know, really, what shouldn't perhaps we be doing this anymore so we can do more of this? That's a tough decision. You know, that's hard when you've done things the same way for so long. But again, look at it as an opportunity. And, you know, the technology is just as cool typically in the cloud as to whether it's on-prem. And then when you hook the two together, you can get a good solution. People are going to buy it. If it solves a business problem, people are going to buy it no matter where it is. They don't care.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we've run out of time pretty quick there. Covering all that, it's good to have Mark back on the program for a repeat session. Hopefully it won't be as long next time. But before we close off this episode, Mark, do you want to just let people know how they can get in contact with you or keep up to date with what you're now doing?
Oh, yeah. So a couple of ways. Easiest way is if you can add me on Twitter. You can add me at AUSMarkos, so Oz, MarkOS, or you can go to my blog, which is intunedin, intunedin.net, but I'm sure Rob will have those details in the description of this recording.
Yep, I'll put it in the description for those who want to know those specifics, but if you do want to know them and can't find them, please just ping me and I'm happy to pass those along. So once again, thank you very much for taking the time with us tonight, Mark, and I'm sure that those who listened got a lot of great information there and some opinions on the side as well, which
lots of opinions.
You know, we've got to fill up the time somehow, you know. It just happens, we just can't help ourselves, but no, it's good to have you back on, and hopefully it won't be as long next time. And I take this opportunity to thank everybody for listening to the latest Need to Know podcast. This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.